Optics, In Re Dr. Optics. You don't always sit on that side, Mr. Kelly, right?
Morning. Are we ready to begin?
Yes, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Deborah Pollack Milgate, appearing on behalf of the appellant and the applicant, Dr. Optics. This appeal presents an interesting question to the Court. It tests the outer boundaries of what suffices for an examiner to carry the burden of establishing that an applicant's claims are prima facie obvious over a combination of prior art. This application has been in prosecution for years, and despite years of prosecution, multiple searches for prior art, and varying combinations of that prior art, the examiner never offered a motivation to combine that was supported by substantial evidence, to combine the prior art references to arrive at the claims that sought to be patented. And the board demanded no more than what the examiner had already provided. Therefore, the board's decision should be reversed. Most notably, there were several errors, but most notably, there is no substantial evidence supporting a motivation to combine a 1920s reference with a more modern headlamp reference that addresses softening something called the light-dark boundary so as to solve additional problems that a modern-day headlamp confronts, of which there are many.
The court and KSR tell us that there's a motivation to take old elements and just put them together and try to make improvements?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. KSR does tell us to do that. However, there is nothing in the prior art. There has to be a motivation in the prior art to combine the prior art to arrive at the invention. So if we take a look at Gage in particular, here's what the board said in affirming the examiner. The board said the examiner persuasively reasoned that it would have been obvious, and this is at the decision, this is in the decision on rehearing at 2, and it's in your appendix at 9. The board said the examiner persuasively reasoned that it would have been obvious to one of ordinary skill in the art to provide a diffractive structure on a rearward surface of Bonitz's headlamp to reduce glare as taught by Gage. This conclusion is not supported by substantial evidence, and I will tell you why. Gage discloses a plain glass surface from a 1920s headlamp. It's nothing different than a window. It's just a plain piece of glass. And with the plain piece of glass, opaque surfaces are then applied so as to reduce glare. Because in the 1920s, there was no way to reduce glare other than to put surfaces on top of plain glass. That's what headlamps did. They kept things out so that, you know, insects and other things wouldn't get into the lighting structure. Gage doesn't discuss a low beam or a high beam headlamp. It doesn't even discuss an optical surface at all. Bonitz, on the other hand, discloses a modern day headlamp that has a mask. And you can see this in your car. If you look out, you will see that there's a darkened portion that is the reflection of the mask, which directs light to the right and upwards. But there's this mask that specifically addresses the issue of glare. So applying Gage to Bonitz doesn't make any sense because the headlamp of Bonitz already addresses the glare. And in fact, the Mosler application, Dr. Optic's Mosler application, doesn't discuss trying to resolve the issue of glare. So there's nothing here that would suggest to provide gauge on a what is an embossed microstructure of bonnets to reduce glare. It's just not in the record. The Mosler, so here, this finding that one would utilize the diffractive structure of gauge to reduce glare in bonnets was simply unsupported by any evidence, let alone substantial evidence. Also with respect to gauge, there's no reason that gauge would modify one of ordinary skill in the art to apply a diffractive structure to an optical surface, and certainly not one with scattering effects, because again, gauge doesn't teach an optical surface. Its disclosure of a lens, again, is only insofar it's a lens as much as a window pane is a lens. It has no optical focusing effects at all. So this finding, too, was unsupported by substantial evidence. And over a period of many years, the examiner continually looked for some reference to teach the application of a diffractive structure to a lens with scattering effects. And this is what the examiner came up with and what was then affirmed by the board, a plain glass plated configuration to address a problem that no longer exists. That's all the examiner could come up with. The examiner also concluded that a person of ordinary skill in the art would apply the manufacturing process of Edo to bonnets to achieve the scattering of bonnets because, and there was this interim step in here, Linde teaches a molding process for making micro elevations on a lens. And what Linde actually teaches is making orange peel, or Linde refers to these as orange peel type structures. But the examiner doesn't explain, and the board didn't demand any explanation for why, among various options for manufacturing a lens, a person of ordinary skill in the art would look to Edo to impart the scattering effects of Mosler. Edo has no scattering effects, and it doesn't discuss creating microstructures in a hot molding process. And in fact, the...
Where has this been hung up over 12 years?
Pardon, Your Honor? Why has this been in prosecution for 12 years? Is that your question?
This goes back to 05. Where has it been?
It does. So there was, yes, that's a good question. There was an initial application that was abandoned, but this one in particular goes back to 2006. It has gone through, and we recited some of this also in our appellate brief as well. There were two previous appellate briefs that were filed in this case, at which point a supervisory examiner took over the case and then directed it to be reopened for prosecution. The last significant delay was after an appellate brief was filed in the with the PTAB, and it was 2 years before it was ruled on. So it has been a series of delays in this case that has made obviously has been frustrating in terms of having some resolution with regard to these patent claims. So with regard to Edo and to bonnets, again, there's nothing in there that says why you would look to the teachings of Edo to find a manufacturing process for the lens that is disclosed in Mosler. And in fact, the Mosler application itself, and this is at the Mosler application paragraphs 55 to 57 in particular, it teaches that there's a specific hot process, a hot press process, one in which you maintain a very hot temperature that ensures that the scattering effects can be easily transferred from the mold so that you get a further refinement of these predetermined scattering effects so as to meet these illuminance requirements. And that's this precise balance that is required to achieve this balance between HDG and these HV requirements without grinding and polishing. And the cumbersome nature of that is also described in that same portion of the Mosler application.
Can I just ask you, I think the examiner said something like the following, just correct me if I'm wrong, that Edo talks about its process as providing, what is it, productivity and cost benefits?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why does that not supply a sufficient motivation to use that process for, as a kind of a modification or combination with the other production process?
Yes. So the reason that that is not a sufficient motivation to combine is because that's a goal of the manufacturing process. If the point is that you can combine a reference just because it's a cost-effective way of manufacturing a lens, well, that seems like an aspirational goal that would apply to anything. This is much the same way, and the examiner said, apply gauge to bonnets because reducing glare is bad. So, therefore, you should add gauge to any headlamp lens, and therefore, under Edo, you should add Edo then to any manufacturing process because it's a cost-effective manufacturing process.
I mean, what's defective about a principle of the sort you're describing that's fairly broad, namely, if you start with one process and you recognize that there's still a problem, so now you know, which is to say, maybe it's this is more expensive than we would like, or there's still glare. And you look around and see how can we solve those problems. Why is that not available as a permissible and sufficient rationale to then go and do what you can find in the prior art, and that you meet other requirements like a reasonable expectation of success?
Well, the goals that are outlined in the Mosler application are very distinct. There's almost, I'm not sure there's any goal that's disclosed in the Mosler application that has anything in common with what Edo discloses. What Edo doesn't provide is any motivation to combine it with something else to arrive at the combination. So there needs to be some teaching, something that would cause you to combine it with something else to make the lens that is disclosed in the Mosler application. And that's not there. Again, the cost of manufacturing, that's a goal. And yes, one of ordinary skill in the art would look to different lens art, but there would be no reason to look to Edo in particular, given the disconnect between the lenses that are disclosed in there. So to summarize, the important point in finding a motivation to combine is to a motivation that would teach, found in the prior art, to teach the combination. And that's simply not there. So to the extent, just to wrap up with Edo, that this would come, to the extent that there would be any reason to use Edo in connection with Mosler's application, it really would have to be coming from Mosler itself, which talks about a hot gob process and imparting scattering effects through a hot gob process. And of course, it's improper under this court's case law to find some teaching in the application because that's the touchstone of an obviousness type evaluation. And this court said in Autoker, there must be some reason, suggestion, or motivation found in the prior art whereby a person of ordinary skill in the field of invention would make the combination. The knowledge cannot come from the applicant's invention itself. So there was no substantial evidence that supported the conclusion overall that there was a motivation to combine the references in such a way as would render the claimed combination obvious. Claim one of this application, in summary, it has a method of manufacturing a lens made by melting a glass and portioning a gob. It utilizes a mold for forming optical surfaces and hot pressing the gob to create optical scattering effects and separately adding a diffractive structure. The combination of elements in the patent claims is then taught to accomplish the overall objectives that are disclosed in the Mosler application. This has to do with the HV illuminance value, satisfying these HDG requirements, providing this way to impart scattering effects, and then afterwards adding the diffractive structure to address color fringe at the same time. Only two of the four problems that are identified in the Mosler application were even addressed in the prior art. The Bonnets and the Linde reference discuss this light-dark boundary and the fact that it needs to be softened, but that's about it. And both Bonnets and Lindsay also disclose different ways of or different structures on the surface of the lens. The Linde reference addresses the issue of the color fringe, but it suggests that that should be accomplished by the scattering effects itself. So in that sense, it really teaches away from what is disclosed in the Mosler application, which is to apply a diffractive structure afterwards. None of these references teach the HV value, forming a lens with scattering effects from a hot gob, or addressing the color fringe in a separate step through application. And in ProMold, this court reiterated the point that a motivation to combine references may come from the nature of the problem to be solved, something that would lead the inventors to look to references for possible solutions to that problem. There's nothing in the references that were cited by the examiner that would lead one of ordinary skill in the art to look to them in particular to come to the Mosler applications. They simply don't teach the invention as a whole.
You're out of time. Will we
yes, spend
2 minutes?
Yes, I see that. Thank you very much.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. I'll start with the claim language. The claim is a little bit unusual in this case because it combines two things. It combines the structure of a lens with a method of making the lens. So the way the rejection is formulated is the examiner went and found the two components that would get to the structure of the lens. And the first component is Bonnets, and that has basically every... Bonnets. I don't know either. I'll follow your lead. And Bonnets really has all the structure in the claim lens except for the diffractive layer on the back side. And so then the examiner goes and finds Gage. Now, admittedly, Gage is an old reference, but Gage teaches the reduction of glare and teaches the reduction of glare by putting this diffractive layer on the back surface of front lens. It's not correct to say that Gage is limited to flat glass plates. Gage says in the specification that it can be applied to the back of any type of front surface, whether it's flat or curved. And those teachings are enough to at least suggest to one skilled in the art that if you're making a headlamp with a front glass piece and you're concerned about diffraction, if you're concerned about eliminating glare, this is one possible solution. Now, the problem at that point is that both of those references are entirely silent about how to make a lens. Neither one of them mentions anything. I think the Bonnets reference mentions embossing the microstructures. So the examiner then goes to the lens art, and in fact, a lens art reference that's very close to headlamps, and sees another headlamp lens front that has microstructures on the front surface that's made through molding. So the examiner then combines the first two references with the next reference, Linde. But Linde doesn't get into the very technical details that this claim recites, melting the glass, separating the hot gob of glass, putting the hot gob of glass between the two molds. So the examiner looks deeper and says, okay, I now need to find a reference that teaches all of these details about how the molding process actually works, and then goes to Ito. Ito teaches a successful process to make a glass lens. Ito is not limited to camera lenses. In fact, it mentions only camera lenses one time, and it says the glass lenses taught herein can be made to use camera lenses or the like, something like that. So you have four references, all directed to lenses, three of them directed to headlamps, teachings from each reference as to why one would at least think to put them together, and benefits that you would get from that. That's a prima facie case. They have approached this appeal and approached what happened at the Patent Office in a way that all they're trying to do is knock down the prima facie case. And they just can't do it here because we have teachings specific in these references for the specific reason the examiner puts them together. It's not as if the examiner is taking one little piece out of each reference and combining them. The reason the examiner had to look to the method of making patents is because the first two patents about lenses simply didn't talk about how they were made. So in order to meet the claim limitations, the examiner at least had to look to see how people make lenses. And the references the examiner found teach exactly the limitations in the claim. Now, they could have come back and supported some sort of evidence to support their allegations they made to the board that the Bonitz lens won't work once you put the diffractive layer on the back. But they didn't do that. They didn't try to rebut the prima facie case with anything other than just attacking it on its face as a prima facie case, and it's a very strong one.
And do you have an answer to Judge Lurie's question about the 12 years it took to get here?
Well, there are two applications, Your Honor. There was a first application that was abandoned by them in 2010. I don't know what happened in that application, but if you compare the claims, even with this application, that are in the publication, that are in the appendix, with what we see now, you'll see there were amendments along the way. So there were rejections, there were amendments, and yes, we did recall a case from the board because after management looked at the case, they decided more work needed to be done, which I hope is what we should be doing, and not just pushing a case up through the board that the examiner's management doesn't think is ready for the board. This particular application has been pending since 2010, which is a long time. Opposing counsel mentioned the time period at the board being 2 years. That's actually less than it has been, and it's coming down from there. I wish things could go faster, but as we saw from the earlier cases, sometimes they just don't. Unless this court has any further questions, I'll yield the remainder of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll restore 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I had reserved 3 minutes. It chose giving me two, but I'll try
I don't mind the three, but it's because you used all of your time, including your rebuttal time.
Oh, absolutely. My apologies, Your Honor. My apologies. I will be very brief. First of all, to start off, this court has said, and has said it multiple times, that if the examiner cannot make out a prima facie case of evidence, then the applicant is entitled to the patent. That's the end of this. So it is simply not true to say that this is all about a prima facie case of evidence and then to suggest that we somehow would go back to the board. We have specifically, Dr. Optics has specifically asked for reversal, and that is because the reasons that were provided were not adequate. It is also not true to say that Dr. Optics did not respond to the arguments as that they were made. There is detailed in the appendix technical reasoning that was provided for rebutting what the examiner said. It is also not proper to say that Bonitz has all the elements of the patent claims, save, and I can't remember exactly what the consideration. Claim 1 is a method of manufacturing a lens. Bonitz isn't a method of manufacturing a lens to arrive at certain points. It doesn't disclose melting a glass. It doesn't disclose portioning a gob from the melt. It doesn't discuss adjusting the temperature of the gob to an appropriate viscosity. It doesn't discuss providing a mold. It doesn't talk about feeding the gob into the mold. The only thing Bonitz discloses is this concept of having scattering effects on the surface of a lens to address a light-dark boundary. The last thing that I would like to note for the record is that Gage does discuss something called curvilinear, so putting a diffractive structure on something that is not just flat. However, curvilinear, it does not describe an optical surface. That's not a description for an optical surface. So it remains true that there is nothing in Gage that leads to this invention. Respectfully, Dr. Optics seeks reversal and so that the board may enter the claims as they were submitted. Thank you.
We thank both parties and the case is submitted.